Stand by the Colours by Nicholas Carter and read by Paul McLaughlin for Saga Egmont. Part 1. Winter Quarter.
Sir, we are all lost and spoiled if we have not commanders.
John Ash, Parliamentary Commissioner in Somerset. By Wareham Forest, Dorset, Christmas Day, 1643. The forest sustained the strongest of them like a snow-mantled mother. It wrapped its chosen men in its fragrant embrace, warmed and even fed them, after a fashion. The starving survivors of William Sparrow's hodgepodge warband burrowed through the drifts after the frozen remains of woodcock and moorhen. Torn stiff, kite-winged rooks from the coiled brambles, as if the rank meat would be fit for Charles Stuart himself. They ate snow off their daggers and chammed leaves, bark, and feverishly dug roots, anything which might ward off the angels of death which trapped so patiently behind them. Soon they would be forced to leave the creaking canopies behind, trust themselves to the hideous wilderness of the coast road, and they all knew the road was bound to be watched after the slaughter and shambles they had left behind them. Their journey had not been an easy one, but toiling 30 miles through the worst blizzards any of them could remember had been preferable to capture at Penmathoc, and almost inevitable extinction at the hands of the ventral villagers. Sparrow's men had slaughtered garrison, pirate, and trained bandsmen alike. They had razed their homes and wrecked their livelihoods, scuttled their merrily painted fishing fleet in pursuit of their main quarry, the notorious royalist privateer, the Messalina's Purse. The hell-spawn blockade runner's mad dog of a captain had thrown a score of them overboard earlier that summer, in a cold-hearted bid to throw a pursuing roundhead warship from his forked tail. Captain Cruikshank hadn't expected the demented survivors of the atrocity to turn up at his smugly secure base and burn the town and his precious ship from beneath him. His legendary life savings, a fabulous hoard of stolen gold and jewels, had fallen into the bloody hands of the victors, a fortune in coin which they had taken turns carrying through the snow, even as their weaker friends lay down in the drifts to die. But their eagerly awaited revenge and unexpected windfall had not been achieved without loss. A dozen and more rebel raiders had been killed, as many more had been wounded, and all their chief officers slain. Worse than that, the ship which had carried them into the enemy harbour in the first place had been lost in the tremendous duel with the despised Messalina's Purse. William Sparrow had assumed command of the survivors, the sailors, the looters, the waifs and strays, who hadn't dared remain behind with the furious fisherfolk. He had ordered the nightmare march to Poole, the nearest friendly garrison held by the Parliament. He had cursed and cajoled and bribed the pitiful bandits, promised them their fair share of Cruikshank's gold when they got home. He had joked and kicked, fetched and carried, bawled nonsensical orders at them in a bid to lift their tumbling spirits.
"Stand straight in your ranks and files!"
as the shivering mob panted through the snow like broken-winded nags at a steeplechase.
"Assume a lazy posture."
As they pushed and crawled and stumbled through 6-foot drifts, some had cursed his madcap antics, some had smirked, and some had ignored him altogether, lost in their own private purgatory. But the survivors had staggered on, frosted weapons clutched in their frozen fists, another mile more, and another, and another. They had given the Royalist garrison of Dorchester a wide berth, taking to the high downs and losing themselves among the snow-heaped long barrows. They had skirted the wide white plains, bent their backs against the blizzards which raged out of the east, and finally, thankfully, reached the welcoming eaves of Wareham Forest, ahead of the whooping pursuit they had so feverishly expected. The filthy weather had smothered their tracks and kept more sensible men at home, so their ghostly journey and miraculous deliverance had gone practically unnoticed. For the first time in his career, William hadn't minded the fact his martial efforts might be overlooked. He had been grateful enough to have reached the temporary sanctuary of the woods. The ancient forest proved to be scored with treacherous ice-choked gullies and reamed by swift boulder-strewn streams. The gushing water turned their blood to lamp oil as they waded, teeth bared, to the uncertain sanctuary of the far bank of the little river Piddle. The dwindling band of survivors shivered in their saturated rags, steaming breath hanging in lazy halos about their frozen heads, knowing in their bones their loud-mouthed captain had it right, but hating him a little more just the same.
Move on, you proxy horsens! You'll freeze sitting there, you'll never wake up again! Do you want your damn share or not?"
The orphans of the forest hardly heard him. They melted away by ones and twos into the brittle undergrowth, or cast themselves down in the...